Good morning, everyone. I'm Theodore Reed, and this is a project that we did in our last year of undergrad and master's program with my fellow colleague, Joe Geis, and our advisor, Sven Dietrich. Now, since then, I and Joe have graduated, and we're off actually working in the real world. I'm at Sandia National Laboratories right now. So this is all stuff that we did at Stevens Institute of Technology. And as soon as we graduated, we kind of continued to play with it, but we didn't work too much on the project. So before I begin, this is kind of what it looks like. This is what I'm going to be talking about. This is a prototype. It actually works. Every feature that we're going to talk about in here, save for one, and I'll mention that, works. It is a UAV. We did no real engineering. We're not engineers. We're all computer scientists. So most of the stuff we did was software-based. So what is this guy? The concept was to create a side channel to send botnet command and control, which doesn't utilize the internet. And I'm going to asterisk there because we do utilize the internet, but just not in the normal fashion. And why do we want to do that? We want to protect the botnaster by shielding their interaction with a botnet. So you pick your botnet and you drop it into this, and we're going to enhance it for you. So whatever botnet you want to use and whatever botnet you're currently using, you can continue to use it. So how are we going to do that? We're going to use a flight-enabled drone or drones to compromise networks and devices and then list the victims into our botnet. And our victims could be hosts on home networks, corporate networks, or mobile devices. So before I kind of dive into this, a few definitions. Botmaster will be the pilot or the individual trying to achieve separation from one or more botnets. So we can use multiple botnets too. A drone, this guy right here, is going to be a UAV designed to shuttle commands from the botmaster to the botnet. And a controller is going to be a special kind of bot inside the botnet, which will be enlisted by the drone and then receive commands from a botmaster via the drone. And we call Skynet this whole collaboration of drones, controllers, and botnets, or botmasters. So traditionally, command and control will enter into a botnet through the internet. And during that phase, it's going to go through firewalls, IDSs, and event logging, scene, whatever have you. And the botmaster, we propose, may reveal themselves as part of the botnet. So in our enhancement, the command and control is not going to enter through the internet, but rather a home or corporate network. And it's going to enter through a side channel, such as a Bluetooth radio or Wi-Fi radio or GSM, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then the command and control will be propagated through the internet by those first level bots, the bot controllers. And this is designed so that we specifically avoid network firewalls and IDSs. So if I can simplify this down into one small graphic, this would be it. So you have bots connected to the internet, a drone in the middle, and a botmaster connected to the internet. So this is the asterisk that I showed. So we are still using the internet, but just not botmaster to botnet. We're going to put a drone in the middle. So a little bit of systems engineering real quick. We used an AR drone, which is a toy you can go out and buy for about $300 as our UAV platform. So we didn't want to design one ourselves. We want to make this as simple as possible. We used a Techlogic Systems 7550 single board computer, rather inexpensive, and they have great tech support, so that's why we picked them. And the only real functionality we need here is a WAN card and a GPS card. You can pick any single board computer you want. And then we added two Wi-Fi cards to it. And then we utilized Amazon EC2 since the TS 7550 isn't very strong. So if we need to break things like WPA or WEP, we're going to use Amazon EC2 for that. So you don't really need what we suggest. You can build your own UAV or use your own, buy your own, whatever. And the only requirements we were going to give to you are GPS and mobile broadband. So this is the last systems slide I have. The AR drone has a few features that we really liked, which was sonar, so height above ground, and a forward-facing camera, so you can actually see where your drone's flying. And there's all the telemetry itself, too, so we didn't have to worry about that. So the TS-755-02, the only two things we need was the quad-band WAN card and the GPS receiver. And then we implemented a little thing that we call SkyOS, which is just a Debian variant. And for there, we only have three main features, which is OpenVPN control link, because we're going to push all the botmaster command and control to the drone through a cellular network. And those are often NATed, so we used an OpenVPN to get outside of that net. A mobile attack framework, you can choose your own. We implemented some default frameworks just to demonstrate that we can break into hosts once we're inside of a network. And Amazon EC2 to do all of our computation. So if you're asking yourself right now, what are we really improving? We've known about OR UAVing for a long time. We've built many of them. At Black Hat and DEF CON this year, we saw WASP, the Wi-Fi aerial surveillance platform. Awesome, awesome piece of work. But we're going to show you how we can compare to them and actually outpace them. So, and there are already many methods to improve botnet CNC, so why do we really care to add another method? And side channel attacks are also known in practice, so what are we really doing new here? So let me show you. So I'm going to make a little pie here and throw in some art. We're UAVing. WASP, like I mentioned, they already have Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, GPS, WAN, nothing new there. Unfortunately, like a WASP is going to cost you about $6,100. So we're going to move into affordable war UAVs. So there was also a presentation at ShmooCon and DEF CON 2 years ago called Build Your Own Predator. And that ran you about $1,000 to $1,500, depending on how or what features you wanted to add to it. And you know, we've also seen some stuff converting RC planes into aerial surveillance vehicles, using Arduinos to save money, and really neat control HUDs. So really, no improvement there. And then covert CNC, like I mentioned before, we have using Bluetooth as a command and control protocol, social media flux, domain IP, fast flux, or P2P. But enter Skynet now, and we have something. We have an innocuous toy UAV, so it looks like a toy. You can go out, you can fly it in a park, and no one's really going to know that you're breaking into networks or doing anything malicious. It can be completely autonomous. So once you fly it and do a little bit of surveillance, it can fly again without your control at all. It's very low power and it's very sacrificial. So if you lose one, say, in a weather storm, it's not really too much money out of your pocket. And your botnet's not going to die. So we're going to borrow a lot of these concepts and features and implement them into Skynet. So our attack framework, we break into three phases. Phase one would be you as a botmaster manually flying it around a route and gathering information on local Wi-Fi networks or any other radio that you choose to use. And then you're going to gather network information and use the composition as a weighted metric. And also record the path, and that's going to happen automatically with the GPS and the sonar. Phase two would be a significant amount of flights around that path that you made, and you're going to collect more information and select networks to attack and break into, offload all those computations to EC2, and then record the networks that you broke into. Phase three through N, so all your phases after that will be fully autonomous. So it's going to the drone's going to go and replay any flight that it recorded. And at this point, you're going to actually start accessing hosts on the compromised networks and start delivering command and control. At this point, the botmaster is not involved at all, other than loading the drone up preemptively with commands and control. So really, we only see two phases that we care about. One would be when the botmaster is flying the drone manually, and that's used for reconnaissance. They're not going to perform any malicious actions here, so it's fine if you go out, walk around with the drone, or you could pilot it from your room over 3G or what have you. And then the second flight, when it happens automatically, the botmaster won't be involved at all, and that's where you actually start performing malicious actions and delivering CNC. So we tested this a bit to see if it was feasible. With two types of batteries on the drone, really low power batteries, one amp hour and the other 1.3 amp hour. And what we got is some times that may not look too significant, but I'm going to try to convince you that they are. So I want you to really pay attention to the 2 hours and the 13 minutes that I have highlighted here. And my little table here will show you whether something's powered. So in the second row, we see the drone and the single board computer are both powered and we're not flying. So we can last 2 hours, 1 minute, and 40 seconds just by powering it on and leaving it here with the 1.3 amp hour, which is actually weighs less than the 1 amp hour. And then the third row, the most significant row here, which would be all of the drone and the single board computer powered while in flight. And we can last 13 minutes and 14 seconds there. So what does that give us? We chose randomly, not really, four flight experiments. One would be the maximum distance that we could fly in 13 minutes and 14 seconds, and that was 2,700 meters. Another one, which would be 700 meters, and that took us 3 minutes and 19 seconds. And then we just left the drone there, and it stayed powered for 1 hour and 50 seconds. These are averages of three flights. And then two other distances, which we don't really care what the flight time is and ground time. I'm going to show you why right now. So I'm going to augment this table with flight numbers and access point numbers. And I'm going to show you that these three flights actually correspond to some distances in Manhattan. The first one being two avenue blocks by 10 streets, right by the Empire State Building. And that distance is almost a little under 2,700 meters. And during that flight, we found 1,700 access points. The second flight is just, so pretty significant. Second flight is one street block by one avenue and in a very residential area. And we found 1,100 access points there. And in this slide, we don't really qualify whether they're WPA, WEP, or open, because when we were looking through the data, we found a significant amount of open networks that were just either secured by a MAC address or some other interface that we really wouldn't want to break into. And WEP networks and WPA networks, we considered to be, it really doesn't matter whether you're counting them separately, because a lot of the WPA networks, it just relies on weak passwords. And WEP is just going to be a significant amount of time or a less significant amount of time, depending on our link to Amazon EC2. The three flights where we don't really care about flight time or ground time is because we're flying them in parks. And we're being casual users, flying them around, attracting people who are interested in what we're doing. We just bought a drone from a Brookstone, and we're going out and flying it for the first time. So it actually has a really cool feature where it attracts victims. So here we don't care about flight time or ground time because we could be sitting on a park bench. And the picture on the right there is Bryant Park, which is the Manhattan Public Library, and it's lined with restaurants. And there are park benches with outlets. So we can stay on for an infinite amount of time if we're just sitting on the bench, reading a book with our drone next to us, recharging. But it's not really recharging. And we did that in two parks, one by 33rd, where the 33rd pass station comes out. So we targeted that park specifically because everyone coming out of the pass station from New Jersey is going to be walking through there. So everyone with their mobile phone, they're all going to have their mobile phones in their pockets, and they're all going to stare at our drone flying around in that little park there. So that's why we picked those two parks where the distance doesn't really matter, flight time and ground time doesn't really matter. But just interestingly enough, around Bryant Park, there were 563 access points, and that little park down there by 33rd, we have 148 access points. Just a little detail there. So how do we do communication with this guy? We came up with an example process to communicate from botmaster to drone and drone to bot controller such that you could lose any in the process and not forfeit your botnet or forfeit your identity. And so we're going to suggest that before you go out there and start compromising drones or controllers, you're going to create a table of encryption and decryption pairs. So we're going to use asymmetric encryption for our commands from the botmaster to the drone and from the drone to the host, but they're going to be different pairs of encryption keys. So we're going to select n pairs such that n is significantly larger than the amount of hosts you're going to attack. So then a drone will shuttle these key pairs in H to bot controllers, picking an I where I is an index into the table identified by an ID at random. So when I is chosen, ID from H pairs is updated to an ID prime. And that ID prime is given to the bot controller. Now, when the drone comes back to the bot master can detect out of this N size table H pairs which ones were given to bot controllers by diffing H pairs and H pairs prime, which contains all the ID primes. So if you were to snatch our drone out of the air, you would see a table of H pairs, an N-sized table of H pairs, but you wouldn't know which ones were shuttled to the drone. And we suggest choosing an N that's greater than 20,000. And this is based off all of the flights that we've done around New Jersey and in Manhattan. And 20,000 is a very nice number because it's going to take you 6 hours on my 13-inch MacBook to generate the corresponding keys. And they're going to take up 800 megs, which on this drone that has 4 gigs, it's not a problem to store all that data. So 20,000 was a really nice number that we found. So you don't have to look at this table too hard. It's in the paper. It's explained a little bit more in detail. But it just describes a few phases of communicating from botmaster to drone to host. And in the first phase, you can just look at these numbers here and the arrows. We're shuttling the H pairs to the drone, and the drone is correspondingly infecting hosts and delivering pairs of encryption and decryption keys to the host. And we recommend that the host set their NetBIOS name to ID prime. So that would be a 15-character ID that we're storing. And then when it comes back home, the H pairs will be given back to the botmaster, and the botmaster can figure out which ones were shuttled to hosts. And then they can encrypt their commands and shuttle that back to the drone. And then the last phase, the controller is able to authenticate the drone, and the drone's able to authenticate the controller. So you couldn't do a known plaintext, you couldn't kind of brute force this drone into telling you data or to telling you which IDs out of the H pairs table were selected. So a little neat feature, not really required here, but it does come into play if you consider things like multiple drones coming together to authenticate one bot, or multiple bots authenticating one drone. And this kind of happens naturally. So at this point, the controller can send information back to the drone, and the drone can send information back to the controller. Now, if you were to go and compromise any one of these, so let's say you're going to do a communication attack, and you're going to take over a host. So you're going to have control of all these arrows here and these two phases. What you can essentially do is send arbitrary information to a drone, which will go back to a botmaster. But what you can't do is enumerate the other bots in the botnet or the other controllers or how many drones that we have. If you were to capture a drone out of the air, you also won't be able to tell how many bots it's visited during that flight or how many bots there are in the entire network. You will get a $600 drone and single board computer to play around with, though. So you will win. So how do we fly this? You can pilot it by default with a mobile phone, and that's included with the AR drone, but you have to be over a Wi-Fi network. We've modified it and added a WAN card and a 3G card. So this actually works out well if you walk into an AT&T store and ask them for a GoPhone SIM card. And what they'll do is they'll tell you you'll need a service contract. So you give them a name like John Smith, and they'll be like, all right, here's your service contract. And you'll get 500 megs of data for $25, which is really good. And an OpenVPN link takes about 9 kilobytes every 4 seconds. So you're not going to exhaust that data, and you're going to need to buy one every 3 months, actually, if you're going to continue to use this. We created a web app for this, so anywhere you can log on and see the status of your drone. And you get a link to its video feed, and you get the GPS data, so you can see the path that it just ran. So theoretically, you could have multiple botmasters all watching one drone, or one botmaster watching multiple drones. And we kind of messed around with this little self-destruct mechanism a little bit. Nothing physical, all software. And what it does is the AR drone will give telemetry data back to the single board computer. And we can detect abnormal roll or pitch. And if so, we can erase all of our data, just so that no one can see what's going on. And the AR drone also has a really nice emergency flag feature if the power is cut or if someone grabs it out of the air. So we can also use that to self-destruct. We'd like to add neurogas and spines. So if any engineers out there want to help us with that, let us know. So here's what the little web interface looks like. It's nothing special. This is me flying around in the Rio for DEF CON. I was actually navigating through the hallways, which were pretty thin in the Masquerade Hotel. And then I got a really nice shot of the west side of Vegas outside my room. And here I also figured out another attack, which is flood the Wi-Fi spectrum, which we were doing in our room, just making a bunch of Wi-Fi networks to attack other people and flood their spectrum. It actually worked on the drone, too. So I'm actually looking into for a Faraday cage around the body so that doesn't happen again. So here you could enumerate network lists and also create a hotspot if you wanted to implement something like a cafe latte attack. So just come up with attacks and throw it on the drone. So some of the limitations, it's prone to physical attack and moderate weather conditions. So don't fly it in Chicago. A botmaster must choose or retrieve the drone and issue commands via WAN link. So if you have an attacker that's watching you and watching the flight and watching where you're picking up the drone, they're going to figure out who you are. And we're working on something that gets rid of that, and we're using little skitter bots to actually drop exfil data on the ground, and then you can command the skitter bots back to you or into a location that no one can watch. So, and without solar panels, the drone can only maintain flight for 13 minutes, like I said, or tax for 2 hours. And bot compromise reveals drone involvement. So if you're able to control a bot, you can see that we're associating to the network, you're broadcasting your NetBIOS ID, and the drone's coming in and giving you commands. So tampering with the flight will cause a wipe and unusability. So we've implemented the software self-destruct mechanism, so that doesn't really, so a physical attack really isn't going to aid an attacker too much. Solar panels, we can get a 6-watt, 100 milliamp, 2.5-inch by 3-inch solar panels, which are very affordable. They're $22. So that would take about 6 to 7 hours to recharge. So if we wanted to land on a roof and recharge the drone, it's definitely possible. And then we can also deploy decoy bots. If our N is 20,000, and if we're in an area that only has 700 access points with an average of 10 hosts behind that, which is a very high estimate, a lot of them could be decoy, or the subsequent command and control that we push to the botnet could tell other bots to act as if a drone's talking to them. So if I can conclude, it's very easy for someone to create a penetration testing UAV. We're seeing a lot of them right now. We did this all with software, not having any engineering background, and we did it for a very, very low price. So, and there, we did it with time constraints too. So if you wanted to go out and buy something that's even lighter, or if you want to buy something that's more stable, you can definitely do it. If you have longer than a semester and a half to actually wait for the orders to come in. So we've built a toy that improves botnet command and control, or malware distribution, so what have you. And when you fly it around, no one suspects the wiser. It looks like a toy. Like I said, I can attract victims to me. And physical and environmental features may become a very important in incident response and analysis. So this is the biggest point that I want to hit home. If you're an ISP, or if you're sitting on the backbone and you're watching botnet activities and you want to give links or control data to an analyst, here the geolocation of IPs are making a huge difference. So if you're anonymizing that data and giving it to an analyst, you're destroying the whole platform that I'm delivering command and control through. So I'm completely shielded there. So I think this is the biggest problem we have. So that anonymous data is going to shield the use of Skynet. So any questions, comments? I'm going to try to fly it after. I have videos if you want to come and watch them. I'm going to definitely try to fly it later in the day if you want to come and watch. Maybe there's a Twitter hashtag I can post the video feed to, so you can all watch it while I'm flying too. So, any questions?
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, just a comment. It gets windier later in the day in San Francisco, so I wouldn't wait too late.
I was going to do it up and down the hallways in the hotel room.
Oh, that's much next. More interesting.
Do you have a break next? Yeah.
Lobby's pretty big.
Yeah? Oh, so one of the reasons why I can't fly right now, I wanted to take out the 3G card and show you. So We at DEF CON, a lot of folks in the Hardware Hacking Village actually helped us reduce the weight on the single board computer. So those numbers, the 13 minutes of flight time, are actually increased because we took off a significant amount. It used to be 200 grams, and now it's 168. And like adding cards, this is only 8 grams. And this is a little thing that I bought from China that helps me put a SIM card onto the WN card. So pretty cool stuff out there.
I was just wondering if you could comment, my name's David, I was wondering if you could comment how noisy it is.
Oh, actually, that's a great question. So I did want to calculate decibels. It is a bit noisy. So I didn't figure out how many decibels it was, but yeah, that's a great question. And it's a great feature that will detract from its stealthiness if you're flying it down hallways. Yeah, absolutely.